We are talking to Alexander McNab about mobile phone technology and also making sure that you have the correct plan in place before you go out and buy that smart new phone to make sure you don't chew through and end up with a massive bill. And Alistair, we were just having a chat, weren't we, because Dawn was asking, you know, hi, what do you do instead of roaming when travelling? But then I was relaying a story about when I lived in Switzerland and it was on the border with France. So often you'd be making a local call or thinking you're making a local call, and in fact it was international. You know, if you're traveling close to boundaries here, I guess it's the same principle. You have to be really careful.
Yeah, and let's not forget, this isn't about voice. So this is about data. Once you've got a smartphone, that smartphone is constantly accessing data, unless you switch its data access, its internet access off. So for instance, if you're driving to Hatta through Villiers Mada, you're actually driving through Nowras, through an Omani provider's territory. And if you haven't switched off roaming and you have got a roaming package with your phone, then when you're roaming on the Omani network and your smartphone's sucking down data, or even worse, you're looking up your mapping app, you're actually not on the home network, you'll pay roaming charges for that. So you're actually got to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, many a time I thought I was making a local call and it wasn't in Switzerland. But getting back to Dawn's question, you know, what do you do instead of roaming? We kind of alluded to the fact maybe you connect with a local network or you just get a cheap phone and get a local SIM card.
Yeah, or just get a local SIM to go in your phone. And the SIMs themselves these days cost next to nothing. They really are peanuts and they're easy to top up. But if you're roaming with an Etisalat mobile, for instance, if you have business reasons to be always on the number that you're on the UAE on, then what you can easily do is just use wireless where it's available. So if you're staying with relatives or something, or you're in a hotel, use the wireless network, but just don't use the GSM or the GPRS network.
What about, which I know quite a few of my family members used last time they were over from the UK, they went to Carrefour and they bought a double SIM card. Phone, which they thought was a great solution if you're often in Dubai and another country. Is that a decent option? What's your thought on those dual SIM cards?
Yeah, that's always an option. So all of these options, you can get a local SIM, you can roam, but just make sure you're only using wireless and not data. You can get a dual SIM phone if you are around. Or what many people do is carry two handsets, one for work, one for play, one for here, one for there. So if you're going to be in the UK and not using a smartphone's feature, do you really want to be carrying around an expensive smartphone when you can, you know, buy a nice cheap Nokia Asha or something like that for a couple of hundred dirhams and use that because you're only using it for voice?
Yes, exactly. And that's what I was going to ask. Most of them, you know, we can be really fussy here, but most of them have a fairly decent camera if that's what you want. You know, there's a certain base level now, isn't there? So do you think that if somebody travels a lot, that because they can stay on the same number, that those dual SIM phones are good enough? I mean, clearly people have very personal preferences, but if we're just talking about a normal preference, shall we say?
Yeah, I think the dual SIM facility is nice to have. It's really about the other features in the phone, you know, what kind of camera you do want. If you do want a super duper Carl Zeiss lens, or if you won't use it that much for photography. And some of today's smartphones really are getting up towards the even better than the first generation of digital cameras. There's some amazing picture quality. I mean, my own phone, a Nokia Lumia, amazing lens on those, especially for low light conditions, and produces some stunning photographs. So, you know, do you want that camera facility? The big decision to take first and foremost, I think, though, is which ecosystem do you want to go for? Because there are three fundamental ecosystems for mobiles which are going to dictate really what you do with your mobile, how you do it, what you spend, what you spend it on, and what you're able to do with the mobile, and who owns all your stuff. Because in today's brave new world, we no longer own our stuff. When you buy music from an app store, that music is effectively being rented for life. When you die, it will go with you. So, but also that will only ever work with those devices. So, for instance, let's take the example of an iPhone. One of the three major ecosystems is Apple and the iPhone. The iPhone will connect you to the Apple's iTunes store. So you'll buy your tunes from the Apple iTunes store. But then if you want to go to an Android handset, which is Google's ecosystem, your iTunes music doesn't move across quite as easily as you perhaps like. So you really, when you choose an ecosystem, you're saying, I'm going to make a bet here for a significant amount of time, if not life. So there's the Apple ecosystem, there's the Google Android ecosystem, and there's the Microsoft Windows 8 ecosystem. All of those give you a device which ties back to a number of services held in this wonderful thing we're calling the cloud, which really does mean just the internet, where your music, your applications, your data, your stuff are all held by that service provider in that ecosystem. And swapping between ecosystems is difficult, if not impossible.
Yeah, so you may have to think, you may be just thinking about a mobile purchase, but of course you may need to be thinking about what computer you have at home, you know, and if you want to link all your devices together.
Absolutely. And do you use Google? Do you use Hotmail? What kind of storage do you want to use? Are you buying books from Amazon, in which case for a tablet, there's another ecosystem coming into play there. BlackBerry is another ecosystem. So each of these dictates to a great degree where you'll be storing your stuff and buying your stuff from and playing your stuff from moving forwards.
As you say, separate ecosystems, but then BlackBerry's kind of blown that out of the water a bit, hasn't it, with BBM, sharing that. I mean, what's been the feedback on that from your perspective?
Most of the people I know and I've seen commenting on it think it's the kiss of death, but we'll have to see moving forwards. There's no doubt at all that of all the providers, there are two who are challenged at the moment. One is Nokia and one is BlackBerry. In my humble opinion, I think Nokia will probably survive the battle. They're doing all the right things. But they've become a much, much smaller player. It's quite an amusing market to look at. You know, back in 2007, Steve Jobs took the stage and announced that Apple was going to make a phone, and Nokia and the other industry leaders were rolling about laughing like the Cadbury Smash monsters. You know, this is the funniest thing in the world. Apple make a phone. There's a lovely piece of video of Microsoft's Steve Ballmer denigrating the whole idea and giggling at it. And actually what happened, of course, was the iPhone has transformed the smartphone market. We're looking at a market of something like a billion units a year currently. It's an amazing market. It's currently dominated totally by Samsung and the other Android vendors. So Apple created that market, led it, took away the leadership of the mobile and smartphone market, and now the Asian manufacturers, LG, ZTE, Huawei, Samsung, are the dominant players along with Apple. But Apple is only one of the players. All those other players are doing it with Android phones. So no doubt at all, Google's Android is a very powerful ecosystem with a very low price point. Apple has stayed at the high end and kept up its argument that if you want the best quality, if you want the most funky ecosystem, that's us. What Android has done is says we can be every man's phone.
But controversially, can a mobile phone be too big? I mean, us girls, we've got our handbags. I kind of look at some of these other ones that are moving between, let's say, an iPad and an iPhone. You know, the Samsung Galaxy is a little bit bigger. I mean, as a guy, is that not going to annoy you carrying around something that bit bigger, or its functionality is so good that it wouldn't really bother you?
Well, it's one of the funny things about these devices is the things about them that nobody ever foresaw. For instance, when they first proposed the GSM standard for mobile digital mobile phones, they included a little protocol in there to allow them to send engineering messages called SMS. Nobody ever thought that would be the death of the radio pager. I remember one of my clients at the time being a radio pager company, and I went to a conference of their PR people to discuss why it's not the death of the radio pager. There were some very long silences in that room. And so it became a radio pager. I mean, if you're in the teas made and bedside alarm clock industry, you really didn't see it coming, did you? But they're now our alarm clocks. We don't have bedside clocks anymore. Alarm clocks are mobiles. Mobiles have become our flashlights. I mean, professional audio recording for radio stations and broadcast is now being done with iPhones and Android phones and not with those very expensive little specialist recorders. It's become a camera, and nobody in the camera market, I think, ever took seriously the fact that these things have become a camera as well.
But do you think, though, it's still a phone? Is it going to annoy you?
It's no longer a phone. It's a mobile. It does so much. It's got so many roles in your life in so many different ways that I think what people are now doing is buying the bigger form factors because they like being able to do that manipulative stuff on a screen, but it's no longer a telephone. Its use as a telephone now is subsidiary. It's probably less important than its flashlight function.
Yeah. No, I just find that interesting. It's reminding me of the old bricks that we used to have in the 1970s. You know, if you're on a long phone call, quite frankly, your arm's going to start to ache, isn't it?
Yeah, and your head starts boiling.
Yes, that's the additional side effect as well.
But that's what we've got. These things are so smart. They do so very many things. And all three of the ecosystems have some amazing applications that really extend the use of these. You can use them for note-taking, use them for messaging, you can use them for chatting, you can use them for camera work, you can use them for talking on Twitter. For imaging, for sound, you've got amazing apps like Shazam that will resolve a song from the radio and tell you what it is and where you can buy it. There's all sorts of things we're doing with these devices now that are way beyond what that old mobile that we used to shout into was.
Yeah, exactly. We'll come back and review those apps because I know, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but it's good to get, you know, again, it comes down to personal choice, doesn't it, what you want. But I think the important point you've made as well today is check out that plan before you go shopping to make sure that it is compatible with what you have in place and your budget.
Check out your plan, choose your ecosystem, and then just go for it.
Brilliant. Well, thanks once again, Alexander, for joining us.
Thank you.